Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Felix Graf Adelman. You are a count, is that right?
They say so.
Yes, a count. The only counts I know are the ones off Sesame Street. The count who counts.
The Dracula, you mean?
No, not Count Dracula. The count off Sesame Street.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. Right, I got it.
Anyway, let's not worry about it. We're here in Wittenberg in your castle, account in the castle. Very nice. Yeah. It's quite a nice place around here.
Yeah, I mean, it is a very, very nice place, and I'm actually always happy when someone comes and visits me and sees the whole place, because it's actually not only beauty, but it's seriously, I'm not whining, but it's lots of work, and it needs all your dedication and most of your money to keep it running. It's seriously, it's like that. I mean, it sounds very picturesque, like the count in the castle.
It is very picturesque.
It is, yeah. And the truth is, I wake up and all I need is a coffee, just like you. And as beautiful as it is, if it's like an old car, but just 20 times worse. There's always something to fix.
Yeah, speaking of old cars, when we arrived, you had a Triumph with the lid the roof off or lid down.
Yeah,
so to speak.
Exactly. I mean, I'm not like the car freak, but I'm really, really into old cars or old things in general. I mean, It's probably if you grow up in a house like this, you just it's my love for tradition, and I also feel it in cars sometimes, and I like old sports cars. Sounds very fancy, the count of the castle with the sports cars. Yeah. But it's cheap, actually. They cost so much less than just a regular Volkswagen, so.
Except for the maintenance, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Especially old British cars.
Oh, yeah, the worst.
I used to love old Triumphs. But anyway, let's not talk about Triumphs. What we want to talk about is Graf Adelman and maybe some of the blends you do, because you're, as a winery, you're a wee bit different, or at least in terms of some things, in that you blend all sorts of crazy things. We'll get on to that in a minute, but the castle's very old, but you guys haven't had the castle the whole time.
No, fortunately not. The story is, it was built in 1272, and of course it's been like in the hands of many families, but most important ones, well, I'll leave that out anyway. The last ones were the Freiherrn von Brüssel. They took over the castle in 1853. They were family, we were related, but not so close. And the last Brüssel, his name was Felix, just like me. He was, he was supposed to be a very, very funny guy. And he loved life, he loved the women, he loved the wine, everything. And he really made the Graf Adelman, or the Brüsseler wine, world famous. But he forgot to marry, and there are no kids, at least that we know of. So in the end, what happened was that we did an enemy takeover, because his sister actually married an Adelman. So that's how, in 1914, the Adelmans took over the castle, and okay, we didn't leave until now. I'm not planning to.
Excellent. Oh, that's quite cool. And how long's wine been made with Adelmans, or it was made before you guys?
Yeah, actually, since we are in Germany and we are very, bureaucratic, we always talk of the proofs. The first proof that in this house wine was made was in 1297. So since then, wine is definitely connected to the castle of Schaubeck. But the vineyards actually are quite, they're much older. There is proof that wine was made in the 8th century, actually. But this castle, actually, before it was rebuilt in 1272, it used to be a Roman Villa Rustica. So there is no proof, no written proof, but I am sure that the vineyards have already been used by the Romans, just like in Austria, you know.
Although, you know, Germany was a beer-swilling country back then, you know, the German tribes and that, they were big beer drinkers, weren't they, rather than wine drinkers?
It's true, but, you know, the Romans, the Limes was right here. So the Romans had been all over the place, and they lived in this house, so I'm sure it would have been too difficult to import the wines from Rome back then. Mm. You know, I'm sure they grew their own stuff, so to speak.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Let's talk a wee bit about modern times with you guys, because you've One of the things that came through when we were having a wee tour around and tasting some of the wines, and that is, as a family or as a business anyway, you've tried to be reasonably innovative within that. Not innovative by most international standards, but perhaps innovative within Gutenberg and within Germany. And you're saying that you were one of the first people to bring barrels in or barriques into the use in Gutenberg.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, we are a traditional estate, of course, not only because we exist for like 800 years, but also because we understand ourselves as a traditional estate. But there cannot be such a thing as tradition without innovation. It's just not possible. And so I think it is always important to look forward and to be open for new techniques for two reasons. One, because it might make the wine better. And the other thing is that you have to look around what others are doing. I mean, that's not what interests me the most. I mean, I am myself and I don't care what everyone else do, but sometimes it's good to know like the weapons of the others. You should know what they're doing. So what my father really, he was a real pioneer. He started, first of all, to raise quality in terms of reduction of quantity, of course. But then, as you said, the barrique barrel that was something, or wine from wooden barrels that was something, it was... a wooden note in the wine was a mistake, was understood as a mistake in Germany back then. And he and I think two others in Germany discovered the barrique barrel more or less at the same time, but without knowing of each other. So it's quite funny when he started experimenting with it, because everyone told him, you know, you're destroying the typicity of the wine by overlayering with wooden aromas. But well, he didn't mind, and as we all know today in Germany or wherever, you know, it's standard, just like it has been in Italy or in France.
Yep.
And exactly the same thing happened with the blending, with cuvées. You know, I would
you don't see a lot of cuvées in Germany. You know, you get a lot of single variety or Spätburgunder,
exactly,
or Grüner or Riesling. You know,
we love the single varieties and we're big fans, but since the 80s, our heart does also beat for the blendings. And it's not because we think, I don't know, that a single variety wouldn't be good enough. You know, it's not that. It's just a good blend is just more than the sum of the ingredients. It's not like that you take some Riesling and you add some, I don't know, some Pinot Gris and then you'll have the great wine. It doesn't work. I mean, imagine having yourself sitting at a piano, taking 10 fingers and just hitting random notes.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
sure you won't
no
sound
harmony.
Like Mozart. Yeah, exactly. There's no harmony. You have to find the right notes that fit together, that don't overlayer. It's like you don't like too much bass in music, and it's the same with wine. You need to find the balance, and in the end, yeah, well, if you do everything right, you have a very harmonious and a complex wine that actually ages really wonderful and might even be a great company to food. I just like the complexity and the possibilities that blends offer.
Did you get much pushback when you started producing blends?
Yeah, because I would have, or my father back then would have many people coming here and they say, you're blending? Oh my God, what the hell? Isn't that illegal? I prefer a Bordeaux. And
yeah.
They're like,
it's a
Bordeaux, by the way, is not a grape variety.
It's a blend.
It's a blend. Oh, no, it's not a blend. Yeah, it is. Okay, but I like Chianti. And it's like, a Chianti is a blend, you know. So
it can be, yeah.
There was lots of pushback to cut it short, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now, I mean, as you said, there's not so many blends in Germany, but there are other estates that do it. But I'm sure that nobody is as strong in terms of turnover. I think we do about 25% of our turnover is made with cuvées. I think that is probably the number one position.
Been tasting some of your wines earlier today and just looking through. We had one that was Pinot Noir with about 40% in there, and then a bit of Cab Sav and a bit of Limburger. But I was down in Baden yesterday, and the person I was talking to said, look, you can't have more than 20% Pinot in a blend because the Pinot tends to dominate. That didn't seem to come through with your blends as much.
No. Well, I think the first one you tried, as far as I remember, that was dominated by Pinot Noir because it was supposed to be with 40%. That sure dominates. But I wouldn't agree like on this general term that you can do more than 20%, because it depends what the other part is. For example, most of my red blends are dominated by Lemberger, or Blaufränkisch, which they call it in Austria. So Blaufränkisch is a very characteristic and strong variety, which has absolutely no problem dealing with an amount of, say, 30% of Pinot Noir. That's not a problem. I don't know how you experienced these wines, but...
No, they're good. We'll talk about the wines next week.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to talk a bit about blending. You also blended a Riesling, and my understanding of Riesling is don't blend it. You're just going to go to the devil, you know.
I understand. Yeah,
that's pretty out there in terms of blending Riesling. Yeah, you see it in really cheap wine, you know, the real cheap stuff, but not in quality wines, which is what you guys produce.
Yeah, I mean, we're big fans of Riesling, and of course, in terms of white wine, Riesling is the variety that we grow the most, with about 20% of the white wine is Riesling, and we love pure Riesling, but you know, I personally can't drink Riesling all the time, and I also love the Burgundy, you know, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, but I was lacking something. And the idea when we first came up with making a white blend together with Riesling was that we really appreciate the freshness of the Riesling, but sometimes it would lack, you know, the body that, for example, the Pinot Gris has. And so the idea is to get the freshness of the Riesling, the body and the richness of the Pinot Gris, and then again, the elegance of the Pinot Blanc. And this, whatever you call it, you know, it's like an accord that really forms wonderful. And it turns out that we have a very fresh, but still a creamy and complex wine that really... Well, I love it, and also the Pinot Gris has been vinificated. You said it vinificated?
Yeah, vinified.
vinified, thank you. In a little bit of oak, not too strong, it's just a hint.
Yeah.
Because that's also a problem with the barrels, if I may do a little excursus. You know, when Germany discovered in the 80s that, you know, there were some guys doing or working with barriques, sometimes in the 90s, everyone thought, okay, we do it as well. And they started throwing like their... light, cheap wines into the magic barrique barrel, expecting to get the greatest red wine, and it's the worst. If you have like it's only wood.
You need a lot of fruit.
Exactly, you need a lot of fruit, and you need a lot of experience to dose it. So we are always very careful with the wood. We love it, and we have all our top red wines are at least 2 years in the barrels with different percentage of new wood. But yeah, it is difficult, and you have to be careful not to overuse it.
Yeah, I was quite surprised because, you know, Riesling is blend, and Riesling anywhere near wood are the sort of whatever you do. I do wine tastings, and to the listeners, this will sound particularly heathen. At the end of the tasting, I often have 18 bottles with an inch at the bottom of the wine, and it's no use to man or beast because you can't preserve an inch at the bottom of wine very well. You know, there's no point.
Exactly.
So I blend them together. I have a white blend and I have a red blend. And I've done it quite a bit. And generally it comes out quite good. And I've learned, don't put the Riesling in. Don't put any sweet wine in. And with the reds, there's a couple of red wines I don't put into the red blend as well. And generally it comes out quite an interesting wine. I've learned a lot about blending by just mucking around at the end of tastings and trialing it out. But Riesling never... went well, but I think part of it was the Rieslings I was putting in were often had a bit of residual sugar in there, which might have upset the others, whereas your Rieslings are quite dry and your blend was dry. Do you think that's an important element?
That is an important element for sure, but like I must say the way that you, of course, described your special private blend.
I'm not saying that that's what you guys
do. I just wanted to point out that's not the way we work. And to stick with my image from before, talking about music, imagine you're at the piano. You know, you can't say, please only hit the black notes, because, you know, all the black notes, they fit together. Never put in the white notes. No, it's just that you need to know when and where and how long or how much.
Yeah.
So it is experience, and Riesling can be a wonderful partner for blending.
Yeah.
What it is for us.
What does it give to a blend?
Well, a certain freshness, of course, the acidity that sometimes, for example, the Pinot Blanc doesn't have. And during the aging process, it can also be very interesting because it's got like this honey note, and it can have, well, as you all know, like old or aged Rieslings have this oily petrol note, and in a small dose, it can be really, really interesting.
Your wines, though, your Rieslings aren't... I only tried one, actually, but I'm getting a feel for wines from around here because we were in Fowles the other day, and your Rieslings were very much like Fowles Rieslings in terms of being quite floral. They didn't have that real steeliness that you get in the Mosel.
No, exactly.
Do you think a Mosel Riesling would blend up all right, or do you think that would be just too sharp?
Yeah, I think it would be more difficult. Yeah, it would definitely be more difficult and sharp.
Yeah, because your Rieslings were more floral.
Yeah, mineralic, floral, and they integrate themselves easier.
Yeah, I think that might be the thing. And if you look at, say, some other Rieslings like from Australia where they're bone dry, but they're quite limey and then the acidity is very high.
Exactly. That's hard because that would always probably pop out of the blend and always show.
Yeah, be a bit too obvious.
It would be the peak. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I've seen New Zealand Rieslings are a wee bit more floral than, say, the others. And I think New Zealand Rieslings are more, well, closer. They're not the same, but they're closer to maybe a Fowles Riesling than the Aussie Riesling. So maybe there might be an opportunity to blend maybe those wines, perhaps.
Maybe, yes. I mean, our Riesling style is more also like the Alsace style of Rieslings. I think that is pretty much it. And there is some blends in Alsace with Riesling that
I've
tried.
Oh, I haven't seen them.
I mean, not many, but I've tried some, and that was really... wonderful, but I think you said it all. The Mosel Rieslings wouldn't work. They don't have the, they wouldn't fit in. They would always run out.
Yeah, they're just too
sharp.
Too sharp and not. And Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, and your Riesling, they all seem to be similar. Not the same, but of a similarity in terms of texture and floral notes. Different.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same soil. It's more or less... the same, well, it is the same vineyard in this case, the same mountain, let's say, because we have also some vineyards which are really completely out of the places and they have other soil, but these ones grow very close to each other.
I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll talk about that next week.
Okay.
And we'll just finish it up here. Is that all right, Felix?
Oh, absolutely.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.